Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to the attention of humanity that is suited to its needs at that particular time. Usually, this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces is in decline, and as our solar system moves more into alignment with the constellation of Aquarius, new energies begin to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly, and chaos ensues as the old order begins to crumble to make way for the impulse of sharing, justice, and peace for all.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Maitreya Show. I hope you're as well as you can all be this morning. Now, on last week's program, last Friday, we had part one of our series UFOs, Crop Circles, and the Space Brothers. So this will be part two. Now, both these programs were written by the Wellington Group and first aired in Wellington. We start with George Adamski's book, Inside the Spaceships, which was published in 1955. And a reader of Share International sent this question to Benjamin Krem. I recently read a wonderfully informative and inspiring book by George Adamski called Inside the Spaceships. His description of the love, wisdom, and superior intelligence of the Space Brothers is chastening. Their ability to live in harmony with universal principles and with a sense of the divine in all beings and in all objective life is thrilling. However, I'd like to know if some of his information was perhaps imagined. And Mr. Krem replies, no, this is all Adamski's direct experience from inside one of the motherships. The only thing he omitted to say, and it was probably because he was unaware of the fact, was that he was not in his dense physical body. George Adamski, of course, was a master of yoga, having been taught by the Masters of Wisdom in the Himalayas over several years. So he was able to pass freely out of his dense physical body and remain in his etheric physical body. The spaceships and the crews are etheric physical matter, not dense physical matter. The crews may lower the vibrational rate to come within our vision threshold, but only on a temporary basis. And this is true for their craft as well as themselves. The particular mothership in George Adamski's account was Venusian and manned by masters from Venus. Now, the Dutch researcher and author Gerard Artsen writes, of all the claims of people having met occupants of flying saucers in the wake of Adamski's story, there is one story that stands out for its curious details. Arthur Bryant became the centre of attention of local media and the British UFO community after reporting sightings on the 7th of June 1965 near Skorriton in Devon, England. He also confessed to investigators that he had already met three beings from space about a month earlier, who took him inside the spacecraft and gave him a tour. Mr. Bryant says that one of the three had said, "My name is Yamsky," or something that sounded similar, while also speaking of a Des or a Les. Now, it's interesting to note that Desmond Leslie was the author of the first book that George Adamski wrote in. The background and details of Bryant's story were recorded in the Skorriton Mystery, Did Adamski Return? And Mr. Bryant had no previous interest in the UFO phenomenon, and he had not heard of George Adamski before his experience. There's also another remarkable encounter in the same vein, which was described by the Italian contactee Giorgio Di Bitonto in his book Angels and Starships, which was first published in Italian in 1983. And he describes how in April 1980, he had visions of a beautiful young man who directed him to drive into the hills behind Genova. He was led to a clearing in a wooded valley and he saw a UFO which had landed and he was contacted by the occupants. He had regular contacts after this first encounter, and on one of these contacts was introduced to the Space Brothers, who called themselves Orthon and Furcon. These are the names that George Adamski used in his book Inside the Spaceships for the Space Brothers. The author, Di Bitonto, was also introduced to another man by the name of George, a rather unusual name among the Space Brothers. And Mr. Krem says that there were many Venusians among us then, and that George Adamski was a Venusian spirit who had taken incarnation for a very specific purpose, which had been fulfilled before leaving this realm in the death of the physical body. And Mr. Krem says that Adamski continued on in his Venusian body after that, his etheric body, which supports the Skoraton story. Now, we all have an etheric body, which can be seen as part of the aura. It's just that we don't really acknowledge it very much currently. Now, the following are extracts from Adamski's book Inside the Spaceships, where the Venusians that met with Adamski explain their philosophy and their concern for mankind. And these are all different excerpts which have been put together. Earthman's concept of the universe is very small. He cannot conceive of a universe without limits, but he still uses the word eternity. Eternity, according to man's own definition, has no beginning and no end. So how vast is the universe? It is as vast as eternity. Man is not a temporary manifestation. He is an eternal manifestation. And those of us who have learned this truth are living in a constant present, for there is nothing but the present. We are aware, as are you and many other people on your earth, that your air forces and your governments know that our ships, which are seen in your skies, are coming from outer space, and that they are made and piloted by intelligent beings from other planets. Men high up in the governments of your world have been contacted by us. Some are good men and do not want war, but even those good men on your earth cannot free themselves entirely from fear. The same is true of your flyers everywhere on earth. Many have seen our ships again and again, but these pilots have been muzzled and warned, and few will dare to speak out. It is the same with the scientists we have contacted. So it's heartening to note that the US Navy has asked its pilots to record all encounters with UFOs so that they can be investigated. It would seem, Adamski said, that the answer lies with the ordinary man in the street and multiplied by his millions the world over. Furcon quickly agrees and said, and if they would speak against war in sufficient numbers, some leaders in different parts of your world would gladly listen. He goes on to say, we of Venus dress much as you do, and we do many similar things. There is no great difference between your form and ours, or in garments of that form. The great difference lies in our understanding of who we are. Since we have learned that life is all-inclusive, and that we are that life, we know that we can hurt nothing without hurting ourselves. Of course, that's the law of karma. And life, to be life eternally, must remain in a prime state of its being, and to express this must be ever new. But you are bound on earth by what you call time. Even according to your estimations of time, when you achieve space travel, you will be astonished at the swiftness with which you can reach other planets. You will have to find new words for this adventure. You call our craft saucers, a flying, a term which applies to the operation of your own planes, but we do not fly. We nullify the atmosphere by an electromagnetic procedure. It is, as you would call, suspending gravity, and in this way we are not hindered by atmospheric interference or resistance, which is why our craft are able to make sharp changes in direction of travel and to move at speeds that have so far mystified your airmen and your scientists. We could tell you much about the control of gravity, a knowledge which is necessary for safe leaving and approaching any planet, and we would gladly give you this knowledge, but you have not yet learned to live with one another in peace and brotherhood. So for the welfare of all men alike, we will not reveal this knowledge to you. If it became public knowledge, some of your people would quickly build ships for space travelling and mount guns upon them and attempt to conquer other worlds. You know there are certain groups in your world already who have made claim for property rights and possession of the moon for the purpose of using it as a military base. This is in 1953 we're talking about. Many Earth scientists are hoping in the not-too-distant future that they will succeed in building spaceships like ours for interplanetary travel. And it will be done, but Earthmen will not be allowed to come in numbers or remain until they have learned to embrace the all-inclusive life as lived by people of other worlds, rather than the selfish personal life found on Earth today. There is much for you to learn about outer space, for it is on space itself that you will move. And Adamski says here, he compares space to an ocean in constant motion, and says that as our ocean liners move on or through the waves of the ocean, so these interplanetary ships may move on the waves of the activity in space. And the master says it is very much like that. And as your scientists work on this principle, more understanding will come, for nature herself will reveal secrets to all who seek with an open mind. And the Venusian master goes on, our main purpose in coming to you at this time is to warn you of the grave danger which threatens men of Earth. Knowing more than any amongst you can realize, we feel it is our duty to enlighten you if we can. Your people may accept this knowledge that we hope to give them, or they can turn deaf ears and destroy themselves. It is the choice of the Earth's inhabitants, and we cannot dictate. And at the first meeting of George Adamski in 1952, he was told that the exploding of bombs on Earth was the main interest of why the Space Brothers are here. Even though the power and radiation from the test explosions have not yet gone beyond the Earth's sphere of influence, the radiations are certainly endangering the life of men on Earth. The radiations released from these bombs are now going only so far, since they are lighter than our atmosphere and heavier than space itself. However, if mankind should release such power against one another in warfare, a large part of Earth's population will be annihilated, the soil rendered sterile, waters poisoned, and barren to life for many years. And it is possible that the body of the planet itself could be mutilated to such an extent that it would destroy the balance in the solar system and the galaxy. These would be the effects directly concerning the world. And the master continues, for us, traveling through space would be made difficult and dangerous for a long time to come, since the energies released in multiple explosions would then be able to penetrate through your atmosphere and into outer space. And Adamski asks, if war should actually come, would they feel justified in stopping us? The master says, as you know, with our knowledge of the use and control over energies far more powerful than any of your brothers on Earth have as yet learned to use, we could, if we wished, nullify your force with our force. But remember this, we do not kill our fellow men, even in self-defense. We are trying and shall continue to try to prevent this war by bringing to Earth the knowledge of what men would be doing. No man wages war except in ignorance. There is nothing wrong with your Earth, nor its people, except their lack of understanding that they are young children in the universal life of the one supreme being. You have been told that in our worlds we live in the Creator's laws, but on Earth you are only talking of this. If you would live, demonstrate, the precepts of even only what you know now, the peoples of earth would not go to slaughter one another. They would work with themselves, with their own groups and their own nations to achieve good and happiness in that particular section of the world where they were born and call home. And if all the peoples of the earth did this, they would be amazed to find how swiftly change would come through the planet. Now that you have a medium for worldwide broadcasting, messages urging love and tolerance instead of suspicion and censure would find receptive hearts. For the great part of the earth's population is certainly weary of strife and its aftermath of woe. And we know that, as never before, they hunger for a way of life that will deliver them. And we'll just leave off from there with the Venusian Master. The next article is called The Philosophy of the Sources, and it's by Wilbert B. Smith, who was a Canadian member of government, I believe, and he was head of the UFO investigation in 1950 and 1954. The article written by Wilbert B. Smith starts with possibly one of the most interesting aspects of the study of flying saucers beyond the reality that they are real and extraterrestrial is their philosophy. What manner of creatures builds and flies them? What do they look like and how do they think? Are their ideas and ideals similar to ours and could we understand them? These are some of the questions that plague a serious investigator. There have been many published instances of contact with these people from elsewhere and people of Earth, and a very great more which have not been published. When the material comes to us through the many channels, it is assembled and analyzed, and it adds up to a complete and elegant philosophy which makes our efforts sound like the simple beating of jungle drums. These people of other planets tell us of a magnificent cosmic plan of which we are a part and which transcends the lifetime of a single person, a nation, a civilization, or even a planet, a solar system. We are not told that there is something beyond our immediate experience. We are told what it is, why it is, and our relation to it. Many of our most vexing problems are solved within a few words, at least if we are told of them, we have the understanding and fortitude to apply them. We are told of the inadequacies of our science, and we have been given the basic grounding for a new science, which is at once simpler and yet more embracing than our mathematical monstrosity. We have been told of a way of life which is utopian and the means of obtaining it. And could it be that such a self-consistent, magnificent philosophy is the figment of the imaginations of a number of misguided morons we call contactees? No, I do not think so. If the only evidence we had was philosophical, we might justifiably suspect, but when it is coupled with the reality of the observations, the witnesses, the thousands of them, we cannot dismiss it easily. And this is especially true when we consider science that has been passed to us from the people of elsewhere, explains in a manner why the sources behave as they do and how it is that they can do things which to us are impossible. And he goes on for quite some time, this Canadian UFO investigator, Wilbert B. Smith. But I'm afraid we've largely run out of time. So we'll sign off there. And if you're interested in any more information, you can find answers from questions that have been submitted to Benjamin Krem at share-international.org. Love and blessings, everyone.